I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark, our final session of the gardening season.
Yes, it
Roberta.
Is.
I'm always sad, but of course we learn a lot every time you're here. What a weird summer this has been.
I have to say it wasn't my favorite gardening season for a number of reasons. It was just until the end of June, it was kind of cold and wet, and then it got very dry, and it got very hot. And then August alternated between hot and wet and humid, and it just wreaked havoc on my vegetable garden. Perennials seemed to do okay. Mm-hmm. They looked fine. Everything bloomed a little later than usual, but still bloomed. But it was not my most successful vegetable year.
You know, and I would even say in the perennial garden, my dahlias did not get as big as usual because they got such a late start.
Mine didn't even start blooming until about a week ago.
I still have one that has a bloom on it, but has not opened.
Yeah,
and that will be the first bloom of the season, and here we are in September.
And
crazy.
The plants, which I have several, which are normally 5 or 6 feet tall, 2 feet?
Yep. My elephant ears.
Yeah.
You know, they took forever to come up, and they're up, but they're not nearly as big as usual.
It's the thing about gardening.
You never know.
Every year is a different year. You're faced with new challenges and new successes and new not-quite successes.
Right.
And so it keeps us interested.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about looking ahead to the next season of gardening. But one of the things as I'm walking through my garden now and with this summer and the heat and not wanting to water as much, I'm starting to reassess some of the things and rearrange and try to make it a little more drought friendly, if you will.
Well, it's funny because we had, looking back over the summer, we had a big rainstorm on June 4th. I remember that day, almost 2 inches, and then nothing until the end of June, where we had another big rainstorm, and then nothing till the end of July. And August has been on and off. We've had periods of a lot of wet drizzle, not necessarily a good soil-drenching rain, wet drizzle, great for diseases on tomatoes. and September has sort of continued that trend where we have, a week and a half ago, we had like 4 days of wet, drizzly, foggy, and all of a sudden, boom, I'm seeing disease on everything.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Dan and I were talking because Dan has done his tomatoes in containers this year.
Uh-huh.
And I did my usual. My tomatoes have been horrible. Dan's are thriving, but he's been watering them every day.
Uh-huh.
Very good.
Yeah.
And this heat,
you
know, so his tomatoes are, my neighbor's tomatoes look great. My tomatoes have been horrible.
My tomatoes are done.
Yeah. Same thing. If the disease and stuff hasn't gotten them, then critters have, you know. I see a beautiful red tomato, I go, and then the other side is all eaten.
What I have found, particularly with tomatoes, they ripened exceptionally late this year.
Mm-hmm.
I usually, pretty much regardless of the season, will get my tomatoes in early to mid-July. This year, I had cherry tomatoes by mid-July, but no slicers until maybe the second week in August. And then they all started ripening all at the same time.
Yeah.
So I was overwhelmed with tomatoes. And if you let them sit for any length of time on the shelf, you'd go to use them and they were rotten.
Yeah.
So I ended up just processing tomatoes. Almost about every 3 or 4 days, I'd do a whole nother batch and then can them.
Yeah.
You know, can them as pureed tomatoes. Otherwise, there would have been a lot of tomatoes in my compost pile.
Yeah. My cucumbers, this was probably the best banner year. And luckily, I planted pickle cucumbers because I actually like them better.
Yeah.
But so I've been experimenting. I've been making the refrigerator pickles.
I've made lots of those,
and I've tried with different recipes. I finally have it down to the one I think. And my neighbor's been a good judge. She's she's been happy to be my tester and decide which recipe is the best. But very popular among all of our summer guests have been our pickles.
Early in the season, I had great cucumbers. And then once that drought really set in, and I went, the USDA maintains a drought monitor feature online so people can access. If you just Google U.S. drought monitor for your state, it will call up a map. And the Cape and Islands and southeastern Massachusetts have been considered abnormally dry pretty much all summer. The rest of the state has had too much water.
Right. Yeah.
But the South Coast and the Cape and the islands have been abnormally dry. So I had good cukes in the early part of the season, and then they just went totally kaput. So I made lots of pickles in the beginning, and then I was reduced to buying cucumbers. Oh, my God, in the summer?
Yeah, I know what you mean. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have a gardening question, comment, or thought for us. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Carrots always seem to do. My carrots seem to be fine.
Carrots are fine. Beets were wonderful.
Mm-hmm. My beets never came up.
Oh, isn't that weird? Mine were great. Swiss chard's going still. I planted it probably late May. It's still going gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. My yellow beans were great.
I didn't get a single green bean this year. Something. I'm thinking it starts with an R and continues with an A and a T. Soon as they came out of the ground, they got eaten. And I thought, oh, it's rabbits because I have bunnies galore. I don't know what happened to the coyotes, but they're falling down on the job. So I put rabbit fencing around the bed my beans were in and replanted. As soon as they got to be about an inch high, they were eaten to the ground. I've had chipmunks for years. I have never in my life seen a chipmunk do that, so I'm assuming it was a rat.
Oh, boy. We're going to talk about rats in a couple of minutes. So let's talk about right now. We're harvesting what's left in the vegetable gardens.
I've got red cabbage I'm harvesting. I'm harvesting kale. I'm harvesting Swiss chard, as I mentioned. Peppers. My peppers have been going, surprisingly, they've been going gangbusters pretty much the whole season. And that's about all I have left. Herbs.
Herbs are great. My basil did not do well this year. Maybe, I don't know what that was, but the parsley did fine. The basil.
Lots of parsley.
Yeah, lots of parsley. But I've had a few people tell me that they've had great luck this year with pumpkins. I have two pumpkin vines, plenty of flowers, no pumpkins.
I had a fantastic year for butternut squash.
Oh, really?
So I just harvested probably about 15 from three plants 2 weeks ago. Mm. And then plants were pretty much done. So it was a good year. Why not a good year for pumpkins? It's hard to say, you know. Every year is just different.
Exactly. And then, of course, we have all the beautiful, you know, black-eyed Susans and the asters and things in bloom now. I've sort of, I love the mums, but I've stopped buying the mums because, you know, they're so, you can't touch their roots at all or they get all temperamental. But the asters, they come back and they're just so beautiful year after year.
One of my favorites is, I believe the name is October Glory, and it stays short.
I mean, it does.
Most asters, you know, if you don't pinch them, which I do, will get to be 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And the lower 3 feet are brown leaves. Right. That's just the way they grow. But October Glory will get about maybe 2 feet high. It tends to flop, so it's sort of a mounding, floppy thing. Mm-hmm. But it has lovely sky blue flowers. They're just starting to bloom right now, so that's one I really like. In terms of mums, I grow the truly perennial mum. Clara Curtis, couple of other names that totally skip my mind at the moment, but they're truly perennial. They come back year after year after year. They're not particularly fussy.
I didn't know that. No, will you find those at the local garden centers?
Yes, you can, or online.
Okay, I'll have to check about that.
Yeah, you can. Clara Curtis is one, and it's a lot. Most of them are either I'm trying to remember the one, Sheffington's Pink or something like that. I'm sure maybe one of our listeners knows the correct name. That's a pink one. The Clara is sort of a corally pink. Mm. Very pretty. Single flowers, not the big doubles, but easy.
Yeah, but this time of year, and this is, I guess, a good time to sort of assess, look around your garden and see, you know, beautiful spring blooms. You know, of course, the garden is different spring, summer, and fall.
Yes.
And it took me many years to get that so that I had something blooming all the time. And I like the fall garden just as much as the spring and the summer.
It's more subtle.
Yes. So many different colors.
So many different colors. You're getting the foliage coming more into play. I have a lot of ferns that turn a lovely sort of golden amber brown, which I think is beautiful. So it's a different aspect to the garden. One thing that I didn't do this year, and I'm going to regret it next year, because August was so humid. I am not a humidity
I'm
gardener. I can work in the shade till about noon, and then, frankly, I'm done. Yeah. I just can't do it. And so I never got around to deadheading my phlox. And over the years, I've noticed that they tend to seed themselves quite generously. And even though I originally planted disease-resistant, meaning powdery mildew-resistant phlox, the seedlings, not so much. So I now have a border in the front that has tons of totally powdery mildew-infested phlox that I haven't deadheaded.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, I don't deadhead my phlox either, and now that explains why I have so much of it.
That's right.
I have to pull some up, but it really does spread quite. I like that spreading.
Well,
that's a nice flower.
When it's in bloom, they look beautiful. When they get powdery mildew, not so much.
Yeah.
And right now, the foliage is degrading. It's sort of brownish yellow. The flowers are gone. I just have all these seed heads. And I really need to get outside this week
and do that.
I
think because mine are sort of in the middle of the perennial board, and so other stuff sort of in like black-eyed Susans
hide it
a little bit. You can still sort of see it.
But if you look, I looked at the weather for the week. Today we're supposed to get heavy rain this afternoon. Tomorrow's going to be drizzly. But from Thursday for the following 7 days, we're going to have fall weather.
Oh, good.
It's going to be in the upper 60s to very low 70s, sunny, dry, and chilly at night, which I kind of like.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like winter, I'll be honest about that. But spring, summer, and fall, I enjoy having different aspects of the weather.
I'm actually happy about that because there's a lot of things I need to do out in that garden. And like you, I don't want to be out there.
Not in hot weather.
And in the shade, there's the mosquitoes.
Which were bad this year.
Yeah, well, you know, they weren't so bad in my yard, maybe because it was so dry.
Oh, well, see, I'm irrigating like crazy. A block away it used to be a cranberry bog, and now the town owns it, and it's managed as a wildlife sanctuary, and it's allowed to remain flooded and wet. So
you've got mosquitoes when I don't.
I've got mosquitoes, yes.
Yeah. All right, so one of the questions we have as we look around and things start to die is, to clean up now or wait until spring? And I used to be one of those, clean it up now, I'd get the yards, you know, in great shape. In the last couple of years, you know, with the grandson around, I haven't been able to do that. But I've noticed that by not cleaning up in the fall and waiting until spring, there's a lot of interesting things happening in the garden and a lot more birds.
Yes. I fall into the get it cleaned up now mode, just because spring is such, I go back to work at the garden center and it's just such a busy time. I don't want to have to do fall cleaning in spring. I mean, there's always some cleanup you have to do in spring anyway, but I like to leave anything that has like a cone on it, like black-eyed Susan or Echinacea or any of the Rudbeckia, the tall Rudbeckias, because birds absolutely love those seeds. So I leave those, they're the last to be cut down. But things like phlox, I have a gazillion hosta, way too many hosta. All of that sort of just foliage-type stuff that really looks ratty.
Yeah.
I mean, hosta by the end of October is just a splat of yellow slimy leaves. And it's like, bleh.
Yeah.
So I like to get all that
cleaned
up.
So you can clean that up now. You don't have to let that die back? Or do you have to let the hosta leaves die back?
If they're starting to look lousy, I cut them back.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer in is when you have the time to do it is when you do it.
Let me ask you a question about hosta, because I have one bed that's all one particular, that blue leaf hosta, and it used to get much bigger. I'm wondering if maybe they're a little too crowded together in there and I need to kind of dig them up and sort of cut them up a little bit.
Eventually they do get crowded and I haven't done it in a number of years, but I have several hosta that really do need to be dug up and split. Probably every 3 to 5 years is a good rotation for digging up and dividing hosta, and give them away to friends and family, or plant them if you have room in another part of your yard. And fall is a fabulous time to do that.
Yeah.
So lots of stuff could be dug and divided right now.
Wishing I had a small bobcat at the moment.
Well, yes.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. It is our final gardening show of the season with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And as we were just talking about whether to clean up in the fall or wait till spring, if you don't get to it, it's okay.
Yes,
it
is.
You can do it in the spring. Allison is calling from Marston's Mills. Hi, Allison.
Oh, good morning. I have a quick question for you about our lawn. We have an area that got scorched from the direct sun, wasn't shaded by any trees. And I'm just wondering if that's going to come back or what should we do to help it along?
Lots of lawns have been scorched.
Yeah, my lawn is not looking particularly good right at the moment. It was part of the problem is not only the scorching sun, but it was a very dry year. And if your lawn wasn't irrigated, what turf usually does is go dormant. So it looks brown and dead. It should, with the advent of more rain and cooler temperatures, start showing green, which will let you know that it'll be okay. If it hasn't started to do that yet, you might be a little concerned. What I like to do at this time of year, I wish I had done it 2 weeks ago, but you know, life gets in the way sometimes. I also have a female dog, and so I have to do this annually. Various sections of the front lawn turn brown. I top seed. I just buy a fairly decent blend of seed. I rake out dead stuff and then top seed. And with the advent of wetter weather, the soil is still warm. It germinates, grows, develops roots, and then overwinters and comes back next spring. So that might be something you could look into.
Yeah, with all this rain we're expecting, Allison, keep an eye on it and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
This is a great time of year to do the lawn, too. It's not too late.
It's not too late. We usually say mid-September where, you know, is good. Late September, we're pushing it. But our falls, if you look over the past at least 2 or 3 years, maybe even longer, we're usually very nice into October. Mm-hmm. Almost November. Geez, last year, I think it was in the 70s at the end of October. Not good for the hydrangeas, but, you know, good for other things. I just go out there with a good rake and I rake out a lot of dead stuff and I just get my seed and top seed right over. I try to make it get in contact with the soil.
Scratch it up a little bit.
A little bit and then tamp it down. And I may do it again in the spring. Mm-hmm. My lawn looks most of the year. By the end of August, between the heat, the sun, and the dog, it's not that good.
I actually, as long as it's green, I don't care. I have a lot of clover in my lawn, and you know what? I like it.
Well, I'm quite thankful for crabgrass. Yeah. I mean, it's green
it's
when
green,
everything
right?
else is brown, so yeah.
Yeah. All right. Diana's calling from South Orleans. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
So I have a question about transplanting hydrangeas and the season and so on. I went and bought a nice Nico Blue on sale, now that they're all on sale at the nurseries, and I've been sort of developing a new bed in front of some arborvitae, and when I placed the plants I first bought, I didn't really place them in the ideal spot, so I want to move one or two of the earlier ones. They're still small, and put this larger newly purchased hydrangea in one of those holes. Is this an okay time, or should I wait? The sources online say, you know, wait till the leaves are off of them, and should I leave the new one in a pot until the old ones.
I would go ahead and do it right now. Give the ones you dig up a very generous root ball, and if they're small, that's easy to do, and replant them where you'd like them, and then put the new one in. Right now, the soils, I think I mentioned earlier, are warm, and they stay warm. They gradually decrease in temperature through the month of October into November, but they don't freeze until fairly fairly late. So you still have good opportunity for root growth and for those plants to become established. So I'm of the idea that sooner rather than later, just to allow it time to become a little more established before the real cold weather arrives.
Yeah.
And then once it does get very cold and the ground begins to freeze, it's a good idea to mulch it.
Yeah. Diane, I would say also before you move them, give them a good drink of water.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
really water them
good,
well.
And continue to water them after you transplant them, and they should be fine.
Yeah. Diana, thanks for the call.
Great. That sounds terrific. What about feeding? I didn't see as much growth on these, the ones that were new last fall. I didn't see that much growth this summer, so I'm just wondering if I need to amend the soil more. Or was it just not a good year for hydrangeas to...
It was a strange year for a lot of plants. I would not fertilize at this time of year, but you certainly could work compost into the soil to increase the organic matter content and then fertilize them next spring.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for the call. All right. So, you know, hydrangeas here, everybody, I mean, it's like the Cape Cod plant, right? I'm thinking of the people are going to go, what? I'm taking mine out.
You're not alone in that.
You know, there's one that does okay, but I have three of them planted along the one side of my house, and the French lace one does great keeping that. The other two, it seems like they, year after year, we've had the problems with them dying back, and I thought, you know what, why, I should, and I mean, I don't really see a lot of pollinators on them. I'm just thinking of pulling them right out.
The mop heads don't have as many pollinators as the lace caps because they don't have any fertile flowers. They're all sterile flowers. Looking around my yard, probably the vast majority of my mop head types did not bloom this year. Some that have some of the reblooming genetics in them did. Most of them were just big, you know, they put out all new growth and nice green leaves, but no blooms. The lace caps, every single one of my lace caps bloomed this year, and I was really happy about that. So I have had people, a friend of mine who lives off Cape, she says, I'm done. I'm just done with them.
I kind of agree with that. And all of my other, you know, the Limelight and the other whitish.
The paniculatas
they have all
are
done
fine.
Great.
Yep. The hydrangea. Hydrangea paniculata blooms on new wood. So even if we have less than ideal conditions for over the winter, things that will kill the buds on the macrophyllas, the mop heads, the paniculatas, and the arborescens, things like Incredibal and Annabelle, all bloom on new wood. So they're fine. Of course, we don't get that lovely blue color. They're white.
That's okay. White is pretty.
White is a color or
and it's,
absence of color.
And it's pretty at night.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
You know, I have one that I moved because it started to get into an overgrown area, and I thought, oh boy, I killed that thing. I just know it. And
they're tough.
It came back. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I cut it way down because it was big, and I moved it, and it came back.
They're very tough, and if people, you know, are interested in having hydrangeas, not necessarily the blue ones, I heartily recommend the paniculatas. And the breeders have been going great guns on developing smaller, more compact varieties. Because the straight hydrangea paniculata, most of the cultivars get 12, 15 feet tall at maturity. They get quite big. But things like Little Lime or Little Quick Fire, the little is the key, or Bobo is another good one that's small. Little Lamb. These are all hydrangea paniculata cultivars that only get to be about 3 feet tall, maybe 4 feet tall at the most. So they're much more suitable for, frankly, our gardens.
Yeah. And like I said, they're beautiful. And
they are.
And they're very hardy, it seems. So that's a good thing. All right. Let's see. We have Amy says, shout out to a new plant in my garden this year, Flowering Nicotine. Beautiful blooms, midsummer to the frost, easy to grow. I don't think it's a perennial, however.
It's not a perennial. It's Nicotiana. And there are a number of different species of Nicotiana, some that stay small. The actual flowering tobacco can be quite tall. There's one called Only the Lonely, Roy Orbison song. I'm dating myself. That will, when the flowers spring up, that will get 4 or 5 feet tall. It's quite large. Fragrant as well. Lovely flowers, and yes, it blooms from spring to frost. I like, there's a species called Nicotiana langsdorferi or dorfii or something like that. And it has a sort of lime green, pale lime green flower, and it seeds itself delightfully, never to the point of being oh my Lord, look, there's more of this darn Nicotiana. But it's nice because it pops up in areas you're unaware of until you see it, and it's like, whoa, that's a nice surprise, and you know what? It looks good there. And if it doesn't, you just yank
it
out.
Yeah. All right, let's see. We have another email. Good morning. Several of my hydrangeas have been attacked by chili thrips. Is there a systemic I can use next year to help prevent them from damaging the shrubs again? I know there are things I can spray, but I always prefer a systemic.
The systemic that people were using was one of the neonics, which generally we are not recommending because of their adverse effect on pollinators. UMass, I believe, has put out a good fact sheet on the chili thrips on hydrangea, which coincidentally it was our own Cape Cod C.L. Fanari who was the first to find them and send samples up to UMass and have them positively identified. So shout out to C.L. And what she does is she does an absolute thorough cleanup of the hydrangea leaves in the fall. Which is not something I always do. You know, leaves fall under hydrangeas, and sometimes I leave them there. But it makes for a great overwintering site for the chili thrips. So she is very big on sanitation. I believe she also uses a horticultural oil at a certain point. I would either contact the Cape Cod Extension Service to see if they have the fact sheet available, or go to the UMass Extension website and download the fact sheet on chili thrips.
Should also mention, before we go away from hydrangeas, I've mentioned I have two climbing hydrangeas.
Yes.
I planted one before the other, and I kept going, why aren't they blooming? This year, finally, they bloom, one of them more than the other. But I was like, yay, so it's worth the wait. Be patient.
It takes at least 5 years, at least 5 years.
And then it's beautiful.
And then it's gorgeous.
All right, we have, let's see, Diane called to say she listens every day to The Point and is so impressed that Mindy and Roberta are able to find the time and energy for gardening. She wonders how they can do all that and still manage to come be on the air.
Well, I'm retired now. I have to say, I retired in 2012. I do work part-time, but I make time because I like it.
My garden isn't as good as it's been in previous years with my grandson around now. But
well, I will also say my style of gardening, if I can actually be said to have a style of gardening, is very carefree and loose and not formal.
Right.
Sort of almost laissez-faire. There's a little bit of structure in there, but it's a little more than a cottage style because I've got lots of shrubs and trees, but it's not manicured by any stretch of the imagination.
Mine either. And then that way, when there's mistakes, they're really not that noticeable.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we had a little station party in my yard a little while ago, and I was like thinking, oh, I have it. There's so many weeds. I was thinking, this is terrible. The yard looks awful. And they're like, where do you find the time? I'm like, they're not looking very closely because they're seeing the flowers and not the weeds.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
866-999-4626 is our number to call for your gardening comments, questions, or thoughts. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so let's talk about rats for a moment here, because they are really prevalent now on the Cape.
It has become probably one of the bigger wildlife problems in people's yards. As I mentioned before the show, there's a great Cape Cod Gardening group on Facebook, and one of the current threads is the problem with rats. A woman had just discovered that she moved a big pot and there was a nest underneath it, and it scared the dickens out of her, but she was unaware that rats were such a problem, and they're prevalent pretty much Cape-wide. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in the downtown areas, it's out in the suburbs. And I've heard people call them, oh, they're just wood rats. Someone on the thread called them roof rats. I think those are just in Europe, but it's a rat.
Yeah. And the thing is, rats are very, very smart.
Oh, yes.
And just be, and you can have, I didn't realize this until this happened just like, when I say you don't clean up until the spring, that doesn't count the vegetable garden.
Correct.
Because last year I did not clean up my three big vegetable gardens, and that was the side of the house where we got a lot of rat activity.
Yeah.
And we were told that the rats were not nesting on a property, but we were along some sort of route that they take, right?
So like a herd of deer.
Yeah, like, okay, well, let's go have some dinner over, you know, in this house, and then we'll move on over here. But yeah, they're very, very smart. So I plan on this weekend pulling up everything that has already bloomed and cleaning up that vegetable garden. So because that's the thing. They say if you remove the food source, then you remove the rats.
Well, here's the problem. A big food source for rats is birdseed.
Right.
And there are many, 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 many of us who derive great pleasure from watching birds in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I take my feeders down in April, and I don't put them back up again until late October. So I'm relatively safe, although I have had rats in my vegetable garden this year. But in the winter, what do you do?
I know. I haven't fed the birds in the last year or two because of the rat situation. But what I have noticed is by leaving some of those, like you said, seed pod things in the garden, I've had some of those same birds. And instead of looking out the window at them, I have to look out into the backyard. They're still there. They're just not all congregated in that same little spot.
Right.
But yeah, I miss the feeders, but I don't miss the rats.
Well, the rats, I mean, I've seen there was one that was deceased on the side of the road. I'm not sure what did it, whether someone had put out, you know, some rat poison or something. And they're actually quite pretty. They're they're not like the dirty, nasty-looking city rats because they're not in the city. They're a nice, beautiful gray color with some white on the chest. And one thing to say about rat poison.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yes, it works. However, there are a lot of predatory birds as well as things like crows and ravens, which apparently we have ravens on the Cape now, that will feed on roadkill. All part of the, you know, big recycling cycle. And if a rat has been killed by a rat poison, that in turn will poison the bird.
The raptors.
I would be very, very cautious about using that.
So the best thing, as I'm told, is to do, is to, if you have rats coming into, like, your shed or your house, is to figure out where that is and sort
close
of
off the
close
entrances.
Off the entrance and keep the food source away.
Correct.
And they will go somewhere else.
Correct.
And then that way the raptors can have at them.
Yes.
Not have to worry about being poisoned.
There are also rat traps
that
will kill them. Most people don't, you know, get a little squeamish when it comes to that. I've killed mice and I've killed voles that way. I've never trapped a rat before, but I may put out traps this winter.
So you can have your birds.
So I can feed my birds.
All right. Let's talk to Josh, who's giving us a call from T-Ticket. Hi, Josh.
Hi. How are you today?
Great.
Good. My wife and I have developed some gardens for bringing in the butterflies and the hummingbirds, and we have about 9 different gardens around the property.
Lovely.
And what's that?
I said lovely.
Oh, thank you. And about 4 years ago, we lost our butterfly bush. It outgrew the property. So we put in a dinner plate hibiscus, which has been amazing. And this fall, actually it was September 2nd, we were gone for 3 days. We arrived home and the hibiscus had nothing but flowers left. Something had eaten all of the leaves, left the midriff, left the netting, but everything was gone. There wasn't a lick of green left on it.
You had the larvae of the hibiscus sawfly which has become a fairly big problem on the perennial hardy hibiscus. I'm surprised you didn't see it earlier in the year because it starts fairly soon, usually sometime in July. I was so busy this year, I didn't get out to the area where my hibiscus are until it was too late, and I had a lot of damage. So I knew they would put out new foliage, so I treated it with spinosad at that time, and it's been okay since then. But there are a couple of generations over the summer, so you need to use the spinosad probably every 2 or 3 weeks throughout the summer, spraying only the leaves, not the blossoms. If you looked, you probably would have seen very almost translucent pale green little, they look like a cross between a caterpillar and a slug. And they feed generally on the bottom of the leaves. And if nothing is done, the leaves turn to lace. All they have left are the veins, not the foliage itself. So that's what your problem was.
All right. Josh, thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Rosalind is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Rosalind.
I thought I'd lost you with suddenly blank. Anyways, I have a question about sea holly. I love the blue that I would find in bouquets, so I planted two in a big tub. They were very disappointing. They never got to be that really nice blue. But my question is, do they die back, or they just, last through the winter, the stalks?
The stalks die back. They're a perennial. I haven't grown them in tubs myself. I've only seen them grown in the perennial border in the ground where they like a really well-drained soil and absolute full sun, no shade.
Well, that's my problem.
Yeah.
Which is why I put them in the tubs. So it does die back.
It dies back to the ground and then comes up again the next spring.
Okay. Right. That's fine. All right. That'll solve my problem. Right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Joan is calling from Harwich. Nope. All right. No, Joan. All right. So we have an email here. I am really enjoying the gardening update currently on the air. However, you're discussing what's happening with plants without regard for our local pollinator community throughout the Cape and Islands. I'm a local beekeeper and bee scientist. Much of the conversation about why certain plants, such as your pumpkins, looked wonderful with plenty of blooms but with no fruit, can be attributed to a pollinator problem. The solution here should be getting bees in your garden. We haven't talked about this, but we talk about this a lot, Roberta, is the reduction in our pollinators that we see in our gardens. And it's a big problem.
I'm overwhelmed with pollinators in my yard, and perhaps it's because I have just a plethora of different plants in blooms all the time. In my gardens, I have lots and lots of native wild bumblebees and native wild bees. I also see a little bit later in the season, not as early as might be expected, honeybees. I have tons of dandelions in my lawn. I do not do anything to dandelions because they're one of the first plants that the pollinators will go to. And I have things that begin to bloom later in the season. Right now I have a Heptacodium, a seven sun tree, and it's just coming into bloom, and it will be literally abuzz with pollinators. Mm-hmm. So I think part of the problem is having all of those things in bloom in your yard.
And also, you're thinking of my yard in particular, where I used to have so many different types of butterflies and bees and wasps. And I'm starting to see a comeback. For many years, it was, but I think partly you're a little more out in the country where
I am.
There's a lot of houses around me that do the lawn people come with all the chemicals and I think that impacts, even though I'm not using any kind of chemicals in my yard, some of the yards around me are, and that's part of the problem as well.
I think we really need to be conscious of the fact that, pesticides, even spinosad, which I recommend for a lot of things, if it's wet, it will affect bees. If it's dry, no, it won't. So timing of your applications and making sure you're not putting it on plants in bloom is very important. And I know when we had the winter moth problem and the gypsy moth problem, I saw neighbors' yards being treated. I saw a crabapple in full bloom being treated, and I'm cringing.
Yeah.
So it's... I think we need to be make our yards friendly for pollinators, having native plants as well as introduced species, and being very judicious on how we use even the biological products.
Right. Before we go back to the phones, I wanted you to mention black swallowwort, because we talked about this when Mark was here, and he talked about some conflicting research. But in fact, black swallowwort may not be harmful to adult monarchs, but it is
right.
to the
larvae. Yeah, yeah. And black swallowwort has been a real problem all over the Cape. For I first started noticing it as being, wow, what is this? It's all over the place in the mid '90s, and it's in the milkweed family. It has little tiny, almost chocolate brown flowers that are really not noticeable. Dark green, shiny leaves. The leaves are actually quite attractive. But they're toxic to the monarch caterpillar. So if you have this in your yard, it's a good idea. Pull it out. The roots are toxic to dogs and to people. The other name, as I mentioned to you earlier, is dog strangling vine. Mm. So it's not a good plant to have.
Yeah, so get rid of it. All right.
I had more monarchs in my yard this year than I have had in ages.
That's great.
I was just amazed at how many monarchs and swallowtails I had. It was just, for me, a banner year.
Yeah. Carol is calling from Kootuit. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mindy. Hi. Thanks for the comment on the black swallowwort.
Oh, sure.
That's been a campaign of mine. But I'm calling to follow up on what you were saying about the rats. Mm-hmm. And last winter, I just had a huge amount of squirrels, did amazing damage on the house. And I was asking the wildlife man who came and trapped them why there were so many. And he said the part of the problem is that with the field mice, exterminators and homeowners are poisoning the field mice, and they leave the house, and all the natural predators eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're being killed, and it's one reason why the squirrel population has taken off and has become a huge problem. But so I just wanted to follow up on that rat comment.
Yeah, kind of unintended consequences.
Don't poison these things, because then other people eat them. So.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Good point. Okay. Carol, thanks for making that point. Appreciate that. Joan is calling from Harwich. Hi, Joan.
Good morning, ladies. On the rat situation, I have a juvenile red-tailed hawk that is solving the problems in our neighborhood.
Aren't you lucky?
Oh, if only we could all have those, right?
He or she is a very successful hunter and found remains in various places around the neighborhood. Anyway, the reason I'm calling is about my tomatoes and my beans. They did beautifully. The plants grew. Very few flowers, so very few beans and very few tomatoes. Why the few flowers?
The thing, I'm not sure how this affects beans, but with tomatoes, the flowering process, and more particularly the pollination process, is governed by temperature. And I think we had the cold June, and then it got very hot through July. And so I saw a real reduction in pollination of tomato flowers as well as production of tomato flowers. And I kept looking at my tomato vines that were growing well, but they weren't flowering as heavily as, except for the cherry tomatoes. Mm. I mean, and, you know, you end up throwing those in the compost. There's so many. But the slicers just were not, it was not a productive year.
Yeah.
That's what I had, was the slicers didn't.
Yeah, you're not alone.
The cherry tomatoes are doing fairly well, but the beans, I mean, the plants are still out there in the containers, and they're in great shape. There's no problem.
And no flowers.
Mm. Just very few flowers, so we had beans, but not what I'm used to.
Yeah. All right, Joan, thanks for the call.
Better luck next year.
Exactly. Becky is calling from Harwich. Hi, Becky.
Hi, I have a question that I'm hoping you can help me with. I discovered an invasive weed choking a hydrangea this year, and the leaves are very long and deeply notched and pointed off the notched ends, and then the plant is covered with very long, sharp thorns, about an inch long, the thorns. And then when they had like a flower bud, it was bulbous, and I wondered if it was a type of thistle, but it ended up completely choking and killing the hydrangea.
That doesn't ring a bell. Was it a vine or a regular plant?
It was a plant that bushed out from its base, you know, at ground level.
I'm wondering if it was a datura. How tall did it get?
Well, it probably got to be, let's say, under 3 feet before I noticed it. So I think it would have gone taller, and then I discovered it in the side yard, maybe half a dozen that were all the same, and you know, those got dug out.
Yeah. If you still have any, I don't recognize it offhand from your description, okay. But if you have a plant left or if you have pictures of the plant, I would take it over to the Master Gardener office at the Cape Cod Extension Service, and they should be able to identify it for you.
Okay. So even if I took them a leaf,
Yeah.
A couple, you know, more than a leaf if you can.
Yeah. The more of the plant you can bring.
Yeah, the more you can bring, the better off they will be in terms of identifying it.
Yeah. Becky, thanks for the call.
I have a pair of heavy duty leather gloves to work outdoors, and I couldn't grasp this plant.
Wow.
Those are big thorns,
Wow.
Yeah. Very sharp, very long. It pierced the glove.
Maybe it was a thistle of some sort. If you can, dig it up, put it in a pot, and carry it over to the Extension Service. They'll look at it.
All right. Thanks, Becky. Okay. Marianne says, we want to add love in a mist to our garden next year. I read that these seeds need a cold treatment to germinate. Is that true? Is the refrigerator treatment as effective as outdoors?
Love in a mist, Nigella. It's a lovely plant. I'm not sure putting them in the refrigerator is going to give you the results you want. You would do as much research online about that as you can. I've just always planted them in early spring. I don't know if the seeds come pre-treated when I buy them, but if you put them out fairly early, they're subject to cool temperatures, and mine have always germinated and done well.
And then Mary says, I found the perennial mums when they were called, I'm going to say it's Dendrothema?
They keep changing the names.
Now often called hardy chrysanthemum. I love my Cambodian queen, which is pink, October glory, yellow.
Yes.
Sheffield pink doesn't do so well.
There's
on
the
my
name,
hill.
Sheffield pink.
They come back every year and spread nicely, so can be split easily. Love your visits, Roberta. So, thanks for that.
Excellent.
And then... I brought in a couple apples from my apple tree in our last minute, and you think they might be what, gala?
I think they may have some gala in them. I'm not really great at apple identification, but they have that like pointed bottom end and very stripy skin, and they were tasty.
Yeah, and I said they don't look perfect, but
Who needs a perfect apple?
And the last 2 years I've gotten apples, and before that it's been several years where I get like one because of the winter moths.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We're seeing some success there with controlling winter moths.
I love it.
Exactly. And then if you're not growing apples, you went to the store, got some figs, made some fig jam.
I did, yes. Both Trader Joe's and Whole Foods had copious amounts of wonderful, beautiful, absolutely dead ripe figs. And I bought about 5 pounds and made fig jam.
Yum.
So people are getting them for Christmas.
Shh, don't tell. All right. Roberta Clark joins us through the gardening season to talk about our gardens. We'll see you in the spring, Roberta.
Yes, you will.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.